KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Oakland.
I'm from Cleveland Heights.
West Oakland, California.
Coming up, business owners in East Oakland impacted by a major transportation project are still waiting for help promised by the city.
It's great to have BRTs, but you got to look back who you just crushed just to get this project going.
Then with a booming Bay Area economy, we'll answer this listener's question.
How much money the cities in the Bay Area spend on tax breaks for corporations to get them to locate in a particular place or do a particular thing.
And we'll hear from a trailblazing trans choreographer who's exploring masculinity in his new show, Boys in Trouble.
The work really asked us to dig deep and offer up our own experiences.
That's coming up today on Cross Currents. A massive public transit project is under construction in Oakland. It's called Bus Rapid Transit, or BRT. It's an express bus line that'll run down International Boulevard in East Oakland. The project is already transforming some of Oakland's poorest neighborhoods. In November, we reported that some business owners are worried their stores won't survive the change. After listener Dan Keller heard our story, he wrote in to our community journalism project, Hey Area, with a question. KLW's transportation reporter Eli Wertschafter went to investigate.
Dan Keller is playing stand-up bass in an old storefront on International Boulevard, not too far from the Fruitvale BART station.
It used to be a music store as well as a recording studio.
Keller bought the building 3 years ago. Now it's a music studio and also his home.
Actually, I named the building Oakland Riviera.
Keller knows this street is changing fast. Construction is underway for Bus Rapid Transit, or BRT, a multi-million dollar project that will turn International into the East Bay's fastest bus route, with dedicated bus lanes and bus stops that look more like light rail stations.
Well, I think it's great. I think it the more we get people out of their cars, that's good. I mean, they want to create a better city. And yet, I was surprised. A lot of people seem kind of bitter about it.
Keller heard my previous story about the project, which showed how some business owners are worried about traffic congestion and losing parking. Some of them are also worried that the line will drive up property values, displacing longtime businesses and residents. In that story, I talked to Sean Perry, a furniture store owner on International. After months of losing customers due to construction, he's now going out of business.
They're going to do it like they've done Emeryville. It'll be different. It'll be different.
I also reported that there was money available to prop up businesses that would be impacted by the project. And so a number of our listeners, including Dan Keller, wanted us to follow up on that.
Was any of that money actually spent? And if so, how?
How is that money being spent? Well, I did some digging, and here's what I found. There's $4.5 million total set aside to help businesses that will be permanently affected by the bus system. The money comes from the City of Oakland, the federal government, and AC Transit, which will operate the buses. And I found out that two businesses that have asked for help are just down the street from Keller's studio.
Would you want to go check those out with me?
I would.
We walk four blocks down to the intersection of International and 20th Avenue, where there's a little shop on the corner.
And let's cross the street here.
The facade says V&A Appliances in faded lettering.
So as we can see, this is a place where they're selling and fixing really large appliances, refrigerators, washing machines.
A BRT station is going to be built on this corner, taking away the parking up front. There's no other parking for clients. I'd actually visited this store when I was doing my earlier reporting on the BRT line, and I met the owner, Vicente Soto.
Sí, la gente trae sus trocas, la gente trae sus camiones.
He's saying customers drive up to his shop in trucks and cars. It's not like they can take their washing machines on the bus. With the BRT station outside, Soto won't have enough room to bring appliances through his door. So he asked the city to help him relocate somewhere else. Now, Soto is in line to get $100,000 from the city to help him buy a new building on International, further down into East Oakland.
There's an empty building right there, so we're pretty excited about that one.
Susana Villarreal manages what Oakland calls its business sustainability program for the BRT line. That program has two parts. One part basically provides advice and consulting to business owners. The other part is a $2 million fund for businesses that need to make more substantial changes. Villarreal says Soto is actually the first in line for that second pot of money.
We haven't spent 1 cent yet. So now with Vicente Soto for VA Appliances, that'll be our first spending the fund.
The fund was approved in July 2 years ago. Half of it comes from federal grant money that was supposed to be spent by June last year. So the program is at least a year behind schedule.
There's a lot of paperwork and, you know, making sure you have everything in order to do this and to get the free grant. So, yeah, unfortunately, it took off to a slow start, and we're really looking forward to a faster one this year.
16 businesses could get funding this year. Villarreal says next year, more than 100 businesses could get support. But that's on a street with more than 1,000 businesses total. Just Kitty Corner from V&A Appliances is another store that has asked for help.
So this is a store you probably have not been to, am I correct?
You are correct.
Dan Keller and I cross the street and walk over to Generation Beauty Supply, another business that would lose street parking.
And what they really do mainly is bulk supplies. So they're selling to other beauticians and beauty stores the supplies they need.
We bump into Tania Z, who is carrying bags of nail products for her own business, Miss Glitter Nail Lounge.
We parked right in front and we were able to come right in, and we need the parking because we have heavy things and we are all Oakland business owners. They are and we are, and to support each other, we need to be able to park.
Inside, owner Alan Wynn says he asked the city to help relocate the entrance to his business so customers can come park in the back.
I'm crossing my fingers and hoping that the city actually hurries up and with the process so we could get some help before the BRT project actually starts.
Villarreal says his original request ran into some trouble with building codes.
He will get the help moving the driveway, but the other things that he wanted on the side door cannot happen because of the codes.
Wynn isn't confident he'll get any help at all.
Basically, there was really no solid answer because there was no single group or single person to handle the businesses. You know, it was just passed along. To this day, I really don't know which branch or who to call in the city because it was always someone new. And after I tried to call that person, and they were like, oh, sorry, you know, I got switched to a different department or so on.
According to Villarreal, contractors for the city have given business advice to more than 400 merchants affected by the BRT line. That includes Generation Beauty Supply because they're helping Wynn apply for a grant to expand his driveway. But Wynn is still waiting for the money.
It's been 3 years since we asked for help. And we shouldn't approach a situation where, you know, the water is up to our nose before we react.
Construction on the BRT is also a year behind schedule. AC Transit doesn't know when they'll begin working on this particular block. So Wynn still has some time to prepare and adjust. But the schedule delays also mean that the city's budget for assistance is being stretched thin.
It's great to have BRT. It's great to have easy public transportation. But we also got to understand that we have to tread lightly. You know, it's like building a highway. Yeah, that's great. Millions and millions of people is going to use that highway. But you got to look back and look under who you just, you know, stomped on or who you just crushed just to get this project going.
AC Transit says their bus rapid transit service will begin in late 2019. On International Boulevard, I'm Eli Wirtschafter for Cross Currents.
Eli is KALW's transportation reporter. You can ask your own questions and we'll answer them. Submit your questions at heyarea@kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Well, as many of us know, April 15th is the day taxes are due here in the U.S. That is, unless it falls on a weekend, like it did this year, and it gets pushed ahead. But this year, it conflicted with a holiday you may not know about. That is Emancipation Day, commemorating when Abraham Lincoln freed slaves on April 16, 1862. It's celebrated in our nation's capital, where the IRS is based, so the due date got pushed ahead again. But Guess what? The IRS servers crashed yesterday and the deadline got extended yet again. So now your taxes are due just before midnight tonight. It's good news for the procrastinators out there. You can do this. But that brings us to another Hey Area segment from one of our listeners, Eli Dart. He asked us a question about taxes and local businesses. San Francisco has one of the strongest economies of any city in the U.S. And with business booming, a lot of eyes are on local corporations to see if they're giving back to the local community by paying their fair share in taxes. Last year, our economics reporter Jeremy Dalmas filed this report to investigate.
I met up with Eli Dart at UC Berkeley. He lives in Castro Valley, but he works near campus here. And he had a question I thought might be a little tricky to answer.
How much money the cities in the Bay Area spend on tax breaks for corporations to get them to locate in a particular place or do a particular thing? How much money goes to that? And what do we get for that money that we pay, right? And so basically, from a citizen's perspective, is that a good value?
It seems like a pretty reasonable thing for a local citizen to want to know. Twitter got a much publicized tax break after moving to San Francisco's mid-market neighborhood in 2012. The Raiders recently announced that they are moving to Las Vegas, partially because the city of Oakland didn't want to fund a new football stadium. Do you have any idea what the answer might be?
No.
Well, I can go look into it and see what I find.
Thank you for doing this.
So Dart wants the answer for the whole Bay Area. That seems like it could be complicated. I'll start in San Francisco City Hall.
My name is Ted Egan, and I'm the chief economist in the controller's office in San Francisco.
Egan says there are only two business taxes in San Francisco, and businesses can only get a break on one of those taxes, the payroll tax.
Payroll tax is basically a tax on the wages and salaries of your employees in San Francisco.
So the more salary a business pays, the more they get taxed. And sometimes San Francisco wants to get businesses to do specific things. So they give them a break from paying some or all of their payroll taxes for a limited number of years. For example, in 2004, the city completely stopped charging payroll tax to certain biotech companies. The goal was to get biotech in the city in order to create more economic diversity here.
There's a lot of biotech research coming out of UCSF, but before they did this, there were zero biotech companies in San Francisco, and they were all in South San Francisco.
5 years after the tax break started, the city had around 60 biotech companies. Egan says this was partially because the tax break made San Francisco more affordable for these businesses, but also it was good advertising, like a big sign in San Francisco that said, "We like biotech." In 2014, companies got to save $2 million in taxes because of the biotech exemption. But the biggest payroll tax break that the city gives out is for businesses here in the mid-market neighborhood. That's the one that Twitter gets for having its headquarters right over there on Market between 9th Street and 10th Street. Spotify and Zendesk also have offices that are just a few blocks down. City officials had been trying to attract more businesses to this area for years.
It's pretty clear that if the goal of that tax was to bring businesses to Central Market, it worked. The sort of harder question to answer is, did it just move economic activity from one part of the city to the other, and the city as a whole didn't get anything out of it?
Egan says this is a question we will likely never be able to answer, even though he wrote a whole report for the city on this tax break. It's unclear which companies would have left the city without it, taking all of their tax money with them. But we do know that these mid-market businesses saved around $34 million in 2014 under the tax cut. So let's try to answer our first question. How much money does San Francisco give out in tax breaks to businesses? We go through the paperwork of the half dozen exemptions in the city.
Enterprise Zone, I believe, is still going on. Clean Technology. Central Market.
And for the most recent year I got all the numbers for, which is 2014, businesses in San Francisco saved $47,302,998 in payroll taxes. And most of that $47 million came from the mid-market tax break. A different way to look at this, though, is not how much money the city lost or gained, but how effective the tax breaks are. They're a tool, one that the city can use to encourage companies to do specific things. But they are, usually, not a good way to bring in revenue.
It's easy to design a tax incentive that loses money, and it's very hard to design a tax incentive that makes money. So the real reason jurisdictions do it is to achieve, as you say, other economic development objectives like jobs or neighborhood revitalization or creating employment opportunities for disadvantaged groups or things like that.
And it's up to elected leaders and the public to decide if the result is worth the cost. I have another question, though. Is San Francisco just taking money from other Bay Area cities? Like, if San Francisco didn't provide that tax break and Twitter had moved to, say, Mountain View, would Mountain View residents get that extra tax money?
Well, that's a fair point to make, except San Francisco's business taxes are way higher than anybody else's. So if they had moved to Mountain View, they'd be paying a small fraction of the business tax they pay in San Francisco.
San Francisco brings in around $600 million in business taxes right now. That's 15 times as much revenue as San Jose, which is a bigger city population-wise. Egan says that the only other Bay Area city that has a sizable business tax is Oakland, and they don't have any tax incentives for businesses to move there.
Well, what does the Bay Area do for, like, attract companies? And the reality is we don't really do very much at all. That is just not something we've ever really needed in the Bay Area.
So I phone Eli Dart back and give him his answer. I have a number for you.
Okay.
$47,302,998. I also do go into all the details with him.
Wow. Okay. All right. So it's sounding to me, based on what you found, like this is a reasonable policy tool that doesn't cost, a huge amount of money on balance. My fear was that there was a whole bunch of money being spent on essentially corporate giveaways.
If you want to try and evaluate a tax break for yourself, let's take the mid-market one as an example. It's pretty clear that it brought new businesses to this part of San Francisco, but it's unclear how much money it actually cost the city. So if you like what it did, and are fine with uncertainties around the cost, then corporate tax incentives might be a policy that you should support in the future. Underneath the Twitter sign on Market Street, I'm Jeremy Dalmas for Cross Currents.
That story aired in 2017. Jeremy is our economics reporter. You can reach him at economy@klw.org. And you can ask your own Hey Area question at our website, klw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Sean Dorsey is a trailblazing transgender choreographer who's the founder of Fresh Meat Productions, an annual transgender and queer performance festival. Sean has a new show premiering in San Francisco this week called Boys in Trouble. The show comes out of 2 years of research during which Sean traveled across the country, hosting community forums about masculinity and interviewing people about gender. He came to KLW Studios to talk with Jen Chien about what that process was like.
This new piece comes out of 2 years of research where you traveled to different parts of the country and you talked to different kinds of people about masculinity. Did you find specific kinds of differences based on where people were?
Doing part of this work, I got to perform and talk at a main statewide trans and queer youth summit. And so it was young people and youth, teens, kids. And in some of these places, they were the only person like themselves in that community. And that was true also for an amazing young trans man that I talked to in Maui, who literally has no one or no friend like himself on the island that he knows. And he doesn't have a single person in his life who's a mentor or older trans masculine person. He has some wonderful friends and mentors and cheerleaders who are trans women. So we've stayed connected. And so, you know, I got like texted pictures when he had his name changed. So we've been keeping in touch. So that was the biggest thing, was people's access to arts and culture that reflected them and just validated them as being wonderful, beautiful, whole human beings. And we should all have access to that.
And is that part of your hope in making this piece, to create that kind of reflection?
Absolutely. That is so much of my inspiration for the work, and the work also really deeply calls on each of our experiences, the five of us who are dancer collaborators in the project. The work really asked us to dig deep and offer up our own experiences, contemporary experiences, histories.
Along with the stories that you are finding in your research.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
I heard you say in an older interview that dance is probably one of the hardest careers for a trans person to undertake, because it's so often so rigidly gendered, the way that partnering happens and what women are supposed to do on stage and what men are supposed to do. And when I heard that, I also thought about the fact of just having your body on display, and that your body is the art form. That's the thing that people are looking at and paying attention to. So I'm wondering how you feel about that these days.
Wow. I feel like I would say all those exact same things again. It's true. Although I love dance from a very young age, I own several leotards. I'm a dancer in my living room. I would make up dances. I was dancing all the time, but never got to do any kind of formal training, and didn't start dancing even in community hobby level classes until my mid-20s. Looking back, there was no language for this at the time. I mean, the word transgender didn't even come into usage until the 1990s. But I get now that there was no one like me in that entire world or field. There was nobody on stage in a dance show or in imagery or history that I could see myself reflected in. So, of course, it was therefore not even remotely an option for me. I've seen this change very little. In the last 17 years being in the Bay, I only met my first professional modern dancer who was on the trans spectrum in the last couple of years. So I have lived my life without a mentor or hero or choreographers I could look up to or ask questions of or look at on YouTube or anything. And I remember when I moved to the Bay, I totally made an assumption that I would come and find my people. I literally had grown up without knowing a single other trans spectrum person in any form of dance. And so I was like, I'm going to move to the Bay Area, and I'm going to find all these amazing trans dancers in my field, in my area. And I got here, and it was like crickets. Then I started to meet professional trans theater artists, visual artists, Vogue artists, hip-hop artists. I brought together a group of awesome queer and trans artists and activists, and we put on what we thought would be the one-time Fresh Meat Festival of Trans and Queer Performance. The show was like 3.5 hours. We were so hungry to see ourselves reflected on stage, and the audience and community response was overwhelming. 17 years later, we're a thriving mid-size arts nonprofit with year-round trans arts programs. We've toured and done work in 35 cities across the country. So much has happened since then. We've supported well over 1,000 trans queer artists. I feel like I was a founder of a family that I'm now just so blessed by and fed by and mirrored by and so, so, so inspired by.
That was choreographer Sean Dorsey talking with KLW's Jen Chien about his newest show, Boys in Trouble. It premieres at Z Space in San Francisco. That's tomorrow through Saturday. All the information is at KLW.org. Click Cross Currents. And that's our show for today. Our Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Nina Gensler Debs, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, Andrew Stelzer, Marissa Ortega Welch, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are James Rollins, Gabe Graben, and Jackie Sajiko. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by Oakland's Almas Fronterizas. Find them grooving tomorrow night at Brick and Mortar in San Francisco. Show starts at 9 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
Sobre los hombros, nena, sobre la pista del baile, yeah. Sobre la piel canela que tú.